The hotel desk clerk refused to divulge her name, saying it was prohibited by law. That convinced everyone that the mystery woman had bribed him for nefarious reasons of her own, since Lenny Inchpot was not the town's most law-abiding citizen. So they went on commenting about her olive complexion, sultry brown eyes, and lush mop of dark hair that half covered the left side of her face. Yet the burning question remained. Why is she staying at that fire trap of a flophouse? That attitude was unfair. The new Pickaxe Hotel, though gloomy, was respectable and painfully clean, and there was a fire escape in the rear. Business travelers checked in for a single overnight because no other lodgings were available in town. Out-of-towners arriving to attend a funeral might be forced by awkward plane schedules to spend two nights. And now, in addition, there was a woman in black who sat in a far corner in the hush dining room, toying with a glass of wine and an overcooked vegetable plate. One resident of Pickaxe who wondered about her was a journalist, a tall, good-looking man with romantically graying hair, brooding eyes, and a luxuriant pepper-and-salt mustache. His name was Jim Quillerin. His friends called him Quill, and town folk called him Mr. Q with affection and respect. He wrote a twice-weekly column for the Moose County something, but he had been a prize-winning crime reporter down below, local parlance for metropolitan areas to the south. An unexpected inheritance had brought him north and introduced him to small-town life, a unique experience for a native of Chicago. Quillerin was admired by young and old, male and female, not only because he had turned his billion-dollar inheritance over to charity. His admirers appreciated his down-to-earth style. He drove a small car, pumped his own gas, cleaned his own windshield. He walked around town. He pedaled a bike in the country. As a journalist, he showed a sincere interest in the subjects he interviewed. He responded courteously to strangers when they recognized his mustache and hailed him on the street or in the supermarket. Understandably, he made many friends in the county, and the fact that he lived alone in a barn with two cats was a foible they learned to accept. Quillerin's housemates were no ordinary cats, and his residence was no ordinary barn. Octagonal in shape, it was a 100-year-old apple storage facility, four stories high, perched on an impressive fieldstone foundation, and topped with a cupola. To make the barn habitable, certain architectural changes had been made. Triangular windows had been cut in the walls. The interior, open to the roof, had three balconies connected by a spiraling ramp. And on the ground floor, the main living area surrounded a giant white fireplace cube with great white stacks rising to the roof. The barn would have been a showplace if the owner had not preferred privacy. As for the cats, they were a pair of elegant Siamese whose seal-brown points were in striking contrast to their pale fawn bodies. The male, Cao Ko Kung, answered to the name of Coco. He was long, lithe, and muscular, and his fathomless blue eyes brimmed with intelligence. His female companion, Yum Yum, was small and delicate, with violet blue eyes that could be large and heart-melting when she wanted to sit on a lap. Yet that dainty creature could utter a piercing shriek when dinner was behind schedule.